Touche. I use strongest words when my arguments are the weakest. We've often noticed that people use the strongest words when their arguments are the weakest. This is the Instant Illumination, Dr. Harrell Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California. Why is it that people use strong arguments when their condition is weak? Why is it? Why do people shout and scream and holler when a gentle I love you would do, you know, or a gentle come here or whatever? Because you're not sure of yourself. You're not sure of the show. I tell Ellen, call Button and say, Button, come. Come, Button. Gentle and loving. And then Button will come. But you say, Button, get away. And then Button says, whoops, what did I do that was wrong? Maybe I better stay away. Might get a spanking. And this is how the world responds too. But think about it. The people who use the most vituperative language, the most rough language, the most swearing language, are the people who are lacking in a vocabulary and lacking in ability to believe in themselves. Now, when a mother says to her child, no, you may not go out and play after supper, you stay in and you do your homework now. But Mom, no, you stay and do your homework. But Mom, look, you little brat, I told you, stay and do. Now, does that make it more important for the kid? That makes it less important for the kid, because the kid knows he's getting his mother's goat. The kid knows he's manipulating his mother and getting her angry and so forth. And now, if the mother would just instantly say, no, now that ends the topic, that ends the discussion. Now, what homework do you have? Instead of saying, go do your homework, say, what homework do you have? What do you have to do this evening? Bring it in and show it to me. No, I don't want to. I think you do want to. Now bring it in and show it to me. Let me see what you're going to be working on tonight. So the kid goes and gets his homework, shows it to his mother, and she says, wow, that's fascinating. I haven't thought about the moon for a long time, you know, not since the astronauts went up there in the 70s, and it was wonderful. But you're studying that now? Great. How big is the moon? How far away is the moon? When does the moon come out? How often what kind of moons do we have? A full moon, half moon, quarter moon, you know, sliver? We have a harvest moon. Well, what are these things? Hey, that is fascinating. They don't have that in that book? Oh, my. What do they have in that book? Oh, they just have how long it takes to take a spaceship to go from here to the moon, and what astronauts have walked on the moon, and what sort of things they found out by bringing the moon rocks back, whether they were had viruses on them and so forth or not, you know, what was the condition. And hey, that is very fascinating. And the mother shows an interest. The kid shows an interest. And then the kid says, well, now I got to do my mathematics too. Oh, what are you doing in mathematics? Well, we're doing geometry. Oh, geometry. It's been a long time since I thought about that. Geometry is such a fun thing because it comes right after algebra. And in algebra, you learn to think in unknown letters. And you give letters information. You give letters quantities or qualities. And in geometry, you start working with things that are not just square. They're round. And you work with, if you go into spherical trigonometry and geometry, it's even more dynamic and more powerful. Hey, son, how big is the moon? The moon is so many miles across? Okay, now, how much is the moon hold? How much, if the moon were all dirt, how much dirt would it hold? Well, it'd be like a ball. Well, then, how do you find out what the volume of the moon is? And I don't know, what's pi equals r squared, pi equals whatever it used to be. It's been a long time since I thought about that. But there are little formulas. There are little formulas. And so the mother says, hey, let's look up that formula. And he says, well, it's not in my book. Well, let's go and look it up in the almanac, or in the dictionary, or the encyclopedia, or on the internet. And so here she is getting him all excited about all these things, whereas only moments before she might have been very unhappy and sworn at him and got angry at him because he had no interest in it. But when she started showing interest in it, then he started showing interest. And when she started showing interest in him, then she had a strong argument. No weakness in that argument. But the weak arguments are, I told you so, do it. You know, you got to do it because I told you so. We talked about that earlier today. But is this what we want to do? Is this how we want to raise our family? I have a condition in my thinking. And the condition is this. If people don't know enough about having children that they have children, they shouldn't. If people have children, they should have them on purpose. And when you have them on purpose, there's only one thing that is necessary for a parent. And that one thing is to love the husband and wife and to love the child, to love the family that you're creating. Now, if you love the child, what are you going to do? You're going to take an interest in the child, in whatever the child wants to do. And you won't just argue for argument's sake. Like little kids, what do they say most of the time?
Why?
Why? Continually, why? And you think to yourself, my goodness, they don't really know what they're asking why about. And that's true. But that's a good question, because it's one that can be answered in any number of ways. Now, a happy parent who chose to have children, who chose to raise them in a loving, positive way, is not going to lose their temper with the child because they ask why. He's not going to get all upset and shout and scream and rave at them. But a loving parent is going to say, why? Why are you asking why? What is your question? And pretty soon the little person is going to have to come up with a decision of why they're asking why. And why they're asking why may be quite responsible or quite different from what you expected. And this is what happens most of the time. And when we are loving and gentle and kind with our own, then how are we with everyone else? If you are a good mother and you are fabulous with your children, how are you with the neighbor children? Same way. How are you with your husband? Same way. How are you with the children you see in the grocery store that are acting up? The same way. If you're in a grocery store and some of the children are acting up, you don't say to your kids, well, you're well behaved. I'm proud of you. You say, I wonder what's disturbing those children. Why they are so unhappy. Why don't you go over and ask them why they're so unhappy? And so the little boy walks over and talks to the little girl and says, why are you so unhappy? And the little girl looks up at him and says, ah, why are you asking? Mm-hmm. I'm asking because I care. Oh, well, I'm unhappy because my daddy died. Oh, well, come over and talk to my mommy for a minute. So instead of saying, those damn kids making all that mess, all that noise in the grocery store and messing things up in the grocery store and just being a disruption in the grocery store. Instead of saying that, instead of shouting and swearing at them, the mother says, what seems to be the problem? And right away, they come up with solutions. And her argument is the strongest in the world. And what is that argument? What's the name of it?
I love you.
Love. The argument is love. When parents love their own children and love all the other children, then beautiful things happen. But when they don't, then things happen badly. And by things happening badly, the children could go and tilt over all the counters in the grocery store and mess up things. They do these. They've done things like that, and they've made quite a mess.
Okay.
Now, Ellen is taking care of her baby here, and her baby is wanting to bark because the baby saw the This is Love, the little miniature pincher. He saw the cat go by, and he has to tell Button that the cat goes by. Because Button doesn't pay attention to it until the kid brings it to his attention. And he's just trying to start the discussion. Oh, there goes your cat. Go get him. You know, and the kids do that too. But when parents find out why, now, why is it that he tells Button about the cat? He tells Button about the cat because he's not trained. He's not trained to sit quietly at his mother's feet or his father's feet and just be quiet. And the same with Button. He's not trained to sit quietly. Now, from now on, we're not going to put the dogs out anymore. We're going to have the dogs sit right at Ellen's feet or Ingeborg's feet or Sylvia's feet or whoever's feet they want to sit. And just say, sit, quiet, gentle. And if you think of raising your voice, the dog knows about it before you do. And he is all set to react. And a lot of times, like Ellen says, he got away before I even knew he was going to go. Well, why did he get away before she even knew he was going to go? Because he understood the psychology of his mother. He understood the psychology of working with adults, of working with these human beings who are not alert to the little signals. They haven't even learned to read body language yet. And when they begin to learn to read body language, and then they'll understand each other and get along more wonderfully in the world. Touché, I use strongest words when my arguments are the weakest. I swear and shout and holler and stamp my feet when I have no authority to do anything. And then you think I have authority, and so you act on it. Whereas if you would just sit back and say, well, how about that? How about that? And where did you get that authority? That's wonderful. I didn't realize that you had that responsibility. And when you do that, then you're the master. You're the master because they feel that all is revealed of their childishness in tantrums, of their raising their voices to try to get attention. Always remember, keep your voice down. Remember this one illustration I've given many times. The chairman of the board walks into the boardroom, and all of the officers and others are sitting around talking. And the president says, okay, now, what is our next project? And so everyone puts input into the next project. And the chairman is sitting there listening. And then the thing's almost done. And they say, well, Mr. Chairman, what conclusion have you come to? And the chairman stands up and he says, thank you very much for your input. And he goes. He does not say one word, and if he says a word, it's a gentle word. He does not say one word to indicate to them what his thoughts are. And they may have come up with some very awful decisions, and they may have come up with some very good ones. But they don't know which ones he's going to choose. And he can use a combination of them. But in his quietness, he doesn't have to shout. He's the highest paid man in the company, you know. He doesn't have to shout. He's the decision maker in the company. He doesn't have to shout. If the people do not respect him, he fires them and hires some people who respect him, if only for money. We are the master. We are all the chairman of the board of our life, of our activities. And so as such, let's remember, we speak softly, but affirmatively. We know what we're doing, and we don't have to shout. So with that, have a good evening, and know that everything that you do, predicated by love, responds to love and returns in love. I love you. I love you. I love you.